I'm Colin Edmund. I was born in the old workhouse, which is situated on Market Hill, just below the Cromwell Lane entrance, and is the building of around now six houses and some flats at one end. My parents bought the property in 1947 for £795 and then set about renovating it to become a family home.
Did they buy the whole property, Colin, or was it divided up by them?
It had been divided up. That was the first time it had been separated out into sections. So they bought what is now known as number three, which is the three floors as you look at the front, right in the middle of the building, just to the right of the gateway. And it is four stories at the back, and the ground floor at the back was a massive cellar in which we actually managed to build two 14-foot dinghies side by side. That gives you an idea of how big the property is. Our bedroom, which I shared with my brother, was big enough to have two 8-foot by 4-foot train layouts connected together with a trap running round the other two walls of the room, and there was still room for our clothes and beds, etc.
So it was a good place to live while you were growing up.
It was a lovely place to live growing up. The road then was quite quiet. Our dog, we used to let our dog out to roam on his own, and he never had any problems with the traffic. As the roads got busier and busier, the road became quite dangerous until they built the bypass along the old railway line.
So, Colin, you went to school in Malden?
Yes, I went to Malden County Primary off Wants Road, and I did my infants and junior school there, but then I went to Chelmsford for senior school. That was because at that time the secondary school in Malden did not do GCEs as they were then, and my parents wanted me to attend a school where I could take the GCE exams.
So you travelled on a bus?
No, actually my mother taught at the same school, so I got a lift with my mother to school, and my father by then was teaching at Sandon School, so we all went together to Chelmsford in the car. My mother was at Westlands, which is the other side of Chelmsford, and I didn't, I lost a lot of my friends then because obviously I wasn't at school with them.
Mm-hmm. So later on as a teenager, I gather you were working on the barges in Malden.
That's right. My my father took up sailing had a little boat down on the waterfront, and I got involved with Alan Pipe, who owned the Marjorie, and John Kemp, who was owner of the Memory before they bought the Falatta. And I was quite keen on helping on the barges, painting and oiling ropes and doing all the maintenance on the barges. Later on, when I was 16, we had a chap called Hedley Farrington who ran London and Rochester's office in Colchester. London and Rochester were probably the biggest small coaster owners of the time, and he asked me if I wanted some summer holiday work. I said, yes, that'd be good fun. So I went away as mate on the Convoy, one of the motorised sailing barges.
So what sort of work were they doing, these coasters?
We loaded in the Royal Docks. The first freight I remember was we loaded a product called ground nut cake, which is an animal food, and we took it down to Great Yarmouth, and it was unloaded at Great Yarmouth and sold to the farmers for animal feed. Strangely enough, one of my later roles was to skipper a little boat called the Subro Vesta, and I brought her into Malden, and it was Christmas Eve in, I think, 1981, and she was probably one of the last coasters to come to what was then Farming Supplies.
Can you tell me exactly what a coaster is?
Coasters are, basically speaking, little ships that tramp round the coast, picking up whatever they can and taking it to wherever it needs to go. They're now much bigger because a lot of the small ports, such as Malden and Thingrenhoe, Roehedge, have all closed. But we used to run into tiny little ports. I remember on one occasion going all the way up to Snape with 250 tonnes of barley. And we used to take quite a lot of material away. We'd take wheat across the continent. And the Magoda, the first ship I was on, was actually importing flaxboard from Romania. We didn't go to Romania. We loaded it in Ostend, but it came by train to Ostend, and then we brought it across. Okay.
So this was your career for a number of years?
No, not really. I then left that. I did the first summer holiday there, and I left there, and I went to college in Colchester, Northeast Essex Tech College, where I did an OND in business studies. I then got a student apprenticeship at Marconi's to do accounting, works accounting. I lasted about a year doing that and really didn't enjoy it. I found sitting in an office all day long far too stifling, and decided that my life was back at sea and went straight back coasting.
So you went back almost to your old job in a way?
Yes, almost to my old job. I went on the Frederick Hughes, the Diction, several other ships, some of which were capable of coming up to Maldon, some of the smaller ones. But the bigger ones, when I went round to the west coast on the Faience, for example, she was 640 tonnes, and we ran coal into a couple of power stations down on the North Cornish and Devon coasts.
So when you were when you were working, coming in and out of different ports, Maldon must have been a much busier port than it is now. Actually,
Maldon was quite a busy port because all the grain that cars, as it's now called, was Green's Flour, used to come in by boat in those days, and lots of other little ports, for example, the big mill at Stanbridge down at Rochford, that had all its wheat was brought in by coaster. But the situation is that the reason for that apparently was because the British housewife likes bread that keeps, and the only wheat that you can make flour off for a bread that keeps was then the Canadian wheat. Now they've managed to genetically modify wheat that they can grow in this country, which meets the housewife's requirements. So most of the wheat now, in fact all the wheat now that is used by cars, comes in by road.
In your younger days, was the river being dredged?
No, the river has never been dredged, to my knowledge, apart from recently when I believe Essex and Suffolk Water pay for a certain amount of dredging. In those days, there weren't as many houses in the area, so not as much water was being taken off further up the rivers, so there was sufficient flow over the Weir at Beeley to keep the mud at bay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, thank you. So the flow of water down the river makes a big difference.
Oh, it does indeed. I mean, nowadays there would only be half as many tides which you could get a loaded coaster up to Carr's Wharf. Now, when I was coasting, I remember the Trilby lying there, carried 180 tonnes. She drew about 8 foot of water, and I can remember us lying on what was Green's Berth and staying afloat round the clock. There was very little movement at all in the tide. Yes, it went up and down, but maybe only 2 or 3 feet. But now, of course, it goes up and down quite a lot, but it doesn't come anywhere near to the height for the number of days you would need to make the wharf commercially viable.
So you're saying that the housing and the development further up the rivers, up the canal, has made a huge difference?
Indeed, yes. So you've got to remember that the canal system and the two river systems that outflow over Beely Long Weir and the Chelmer Weir drain 2/3 of the surface area of Essex. So it's a massive catchment area. But everywhere where you've built houses, if you look at how big Witham and Braintree and towns like that have become, and Chelmsford, because it all comes down from Chelmsford as well, it's huge. And unfortunately, they've drained all that land, and it does run off very quickly in times of rain, but it runs off far too quickly, either for the water company to be able to catch it, or for it to have any effect on the mud in the river.
Right.
So it's very difficult to work out whether or not you can get rid of the mud in off the quay at Maldon. You can keep dredging and keep dredging, but until there's a decent flow down the middle, you're never going to keep it clear.
Can we jump ahead a little bit, Colin? You were the lock keeper, I understand, at Heybridge Basin. How did that come about? How did you get that job?
I kept my own yacht in Heybridge Basin, a 42-foot boat built by Dan Webb and Fieses in Maldon, just before the war. And I knew George Clark, who was the incumbent of the lock keeper's job at the time, very, very good friend. And he said he was about to retire. And I said, oh, I said, I'm only 35. I don't think I want the job just yet. He pointed out that it was the sort of job that whoever took it would probably stay there till they died, and suggested that if I was really interested in the job, I should apply. I did apply, but unfortunately my application was a little bit late and I missed the cut-off date, and they'd actually appointed somebody else. This gentleman actually didn't take the job in the end, because his wife refused to live in the cottage, and I got a phone call. I was up in Scotland and got a phone call to say if I was still interested, would I be prepared to go for an interview? I was still interested, and I came home on leave a couple of weeks later and went to the office and was basically given the job there and then. So my wife and I moved into the lockhouse. We were there 22 years, I think.
So what year was that?
That was 1985.
85. Yeah. And what was the lockhouse, the cottage? What was it like?
Damp and cold. It's a double skin brick building, but very little insulation. We did a lot of work on it, and the company did put all new windows in. And I remember us living in one bedroom while they put all new windows in the rest of the house. Had an old arger in the corner, which unfortunately was rusted through and leaking everywhere, so that had to come out. And we managed to struggle on, but it was quite uncomfortable because we moved in November, so we spent the first winter really quite chilly. But once it was done, it was quite a comfortable house, although it was still coal-fed radiators, which were run on a back boiler from a Parkray in the main lounge. And a few years later, I actually managed to install oil-fired central heating, which did improve the place considerably.
And was it a busy job?
Not as busy as it is now. It wasn't that busy. Quite a lot of other responsibilities went with it, like looking after the moorings of the boats in the canal, and we had more boats then. But that's an economic decline in boating. It was a full-time job. There was a little sentence in my contract that said, if there's not enough work at Heybridge Basin, you will be required to go and help elsewhere on the navigation. And I never was asked to go and help elsewhere. It was considered it was a full-time job.
So were you supervising boats going through the lock gates?
Yes, that was the main role. The main job was to get boats in and out safely. When I went there, we had the Vicunia was laying in one corner, virtually derelict. And I had to arrange, one of the first things I had to do was to arrange to take the mast and spreet down on her, because it looked as though it was about to fall down anyway. So we had to hire a crane and take that down. But that was the sort of work that was involved. The place certainly wasn't as busy with visitors as it is today.
Did you have people sort of wandering up to your cottage, and, you know, members of the public just wandering around?
Oh, yes.
Looking through the windows.
Yes. We had people knocking on the door asking if it was a museum. One occasion we had people sat in the front garden having their picnic. But that was part of the role, was to make people realise that the navigation was there and was actually quite important, and to make people understand its historical significance.
Did you have any dramas? Are there any particular stories you want to tell us?
Not particularly dramas. 25 years, I think it works out on average you fish somebody out every 5 years. Falling overboard, yeah. Well, we had two or three falling overboard, and we had three deaths while I was there.
Really?
Of people falling in, and not people that were staying, living on their boats, and not being realised that they'd not been seen for a couple of days.
Oh, dear. So you had to keep an eye on all the boats that were moored around.
Yeah.
That end of the canal.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, all that end of the canal, up as far as Hall Bridge. And there were some quite big boats fairly well up the canal in those days. But now it's much more a visitor attraction. And we get a lot of continental boats coming in now.
And of course, just recently, new gates have been put in, haven't they? No comment.
Yes, yes. Well, we've had new top gates, top wooden gates, and new middle wooden gates, as we call them. We're waiting for the Environment Agency to decide what they're going to do with the floodgates, and we've had a new steel outer gate fitted.
Mm.
A very expensive job.
Mm. And there is still a lock keeper there.
There is still a full-time lock keeper based at Heybridge Basin. Yes. Yeah. A chap called Grant does it now, who was born in Goldhanger, or lived in Goldhanger in his childhood.
So how many years were you there?
I was there about 25 years. Mm. It's difficult to actually pin it down, because when I left there, I became manager of the whole navigation.
Did you?
Yeah, so I was manager for 5 years from Heybridge Basin all the way into Springfield Basin at Chelmsford. It's quite interesting, because the company went, the original Chelmsford Blackwater Navigation Company actually went into administration. While I was in New Zealand, I went to visit some friends in New Zealand, I came back and a guy who'd been looking after the lock, it was winter time, so there wasn't a lot to do, looking after the lock, had left a note on my desk. It said, please phone this number, which was a Norwich number. And I phoned Norwich and I said, who am I talking to? And the chap said, oh, he said, I'm the administrator for the old Chelmsford Blackwater Navigation. I said, oh, right. He said, we'd like you to carry on. And I thought, oh, fine. I said, what do you mean carry on? And he said, well, he said, we'd like you to manage the navigation from Heybridge Basin to Chelmsford. And I said, oh. I said, why is that then? And he said, well, we sacked everybody else. Which was a complete shock to me. And I said, oh, right, OK, fine. Well, I said, I don't know how well I'll get on. I said, it's 13 miles. I said, it's quite a big area to try and look after as one person. Oh, he said, we'll find you some help. I said, OK, that's fine then. Oh, he said, and by the way, that includes the pub opposite, because the company still owned the pub in those at that time.
The old ship?
Yeah. Mm. So I was running a 13-mile navigation and a pub.
Not bad.
I have to say the job was considerably more than full-time.
Right. Right.
Because I was locking the pub up at 11 o'clock at night, having been locking people out at 4 o'clock that morning.
Oh, dear me. So looking after the navigation, all those miles of the navigation, so what did that entail?
It entailed not very much. Because the company was in administration, there was no money. So you couldn't sort of say, well, we need to put a new set of lock gates in at Home Hill or anywhere like that, because there just wasn't any money for it. And they'd sold off quite a lot of the property in order to recover the debt, some of the debt. And it wasn't actually until the IWA, Inland Waterways Association, took over running it by signing a management agreement and set up a company called Essex Waterways Limited, which I then became their manager and got rid of having to report to the administrator, and they sold the pub, so that was pretty good by then.
What do you remember what year that was?
We've been running it for 15 years now, so 2003.
2003?
Yeah, about 2003,
yeah.
When Essex Waterways was formed. Essex Waterways is quite a little interesting subsidiary of the Inland Waterways Association, because it's a not-for-profit company.
Mm.
And it runs the navigation purely for public benefit.
Mm.
So our intention is to run it for public benefit, so that people can walk it, canoe it, fish it, whatever they want, within the terms of our bylaws, which aren't that draconian. So most people, we hope, enjoy using it. And in the time we've been running it, we've managed to replace, apart from next April, we will have replaced every pair of lock gates on the canal.
Really?
Mm. We spent an awful lot of money. Mm. Some of it's been grant funded, but most of it's been for our own careful management.
Mm. Mm. And so does that involve keeping the footpaths clear?
It involves
undergrowth.
Yep, it involves trying to keep the footpaths as clear as we can. We've bought some quite good modern machinery that does that for us. We can get a little tractor almost all the way along the canal. There's a couple of places where it's too narrow and we just can't get through. But for most part, yeah, we maintain the footpath at a reasonable width. We get a grant from Essex County Council for maintaining the footpath. And we maintain all the structures. So we maintain all the weirs and all the locks.
Mm. So you'd left the lock keeper's cottage. Where were you living when you were looking after the whole navigation?
Well, we bought a 57-foot by 14-foot wide beam barge, which was based, called Mary Seacole, which was based just above the car park steps as you go into Heybridge Basin, and we lived on her for about 4 years, and that was just purely because I needed to be fairly close to the new lock keeper, just to make sure he was happy with the role he'd taken on.
Was that a good time, living on the barge?
It was lovely, yeah. Our dog loved it more than we did. Mm. She used to come out and sit on her landing stage and see all her friends going by. We liked it there, yeah. It was very pleasant, and it was a nice modern barge. It was easy to keep warm. It's easy to maintain.
Mm.
But then our daughter got married and we decided to move back to our house.
Right, yeah, yeah. Can we go back to the ship pub, the old ship at Heybridge Basin? Colin, can you tell us a little bit about some of the funeral traditions there?
It's quite interesting because when a villager dies, the flag up on the lock hill by the lock side is always put at half mast. It's quite interesting because you sort of come out of the house and put the flag at half mast and people come straight up to you and say, oh, who is it now? Who's gone? And you have to sort of think, well, unfortunately, it's so-and-so. One of the sort of traditions that seems to have grown up over the years is that once the crematorium or the funeral was completed, everybody sort of joins back in the pubs, in one or other of the pubs, and there's normally raising a glass or a tot of usually rum, because they're nearly all seafarers down there, by standing on the seawall out in the open and just raising a glass. And Mac, who was the landlord of the old ship, had requested something slightly different, in that he wanted to have his ashes strapped to a maroon rocket and fired at the time, so that the ashes canister blew apart and his ashes came down over the river. Now, this was magnificently done by an ex-Royal Marine friend of ours, who is currently the river bailiff for the Maldon area. He fired the rocket, and we all sat and stood and drank a toast to Mac.
And I believe you said a few words at one of at a funeral.
Yes,
a while ago.
I said a few words at Tom Polden's funeral. Tom had a saying that when he was in the bar and it was blowing a howling gale, he'd sort of say, "Well, I'd rather be in here drinking a pint than down there wishing I was in here, than I would be down there wishing I was back in the pub."
Exactly, exactly. Well, that's lovely, Colin. Thank you very much.